Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Well, all eyes are on the health reform endgame in Washington right now, and we will continue to follow it today, too. Later in the show, there is a big development just in the last hour. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office has just given a budget score to the newest version, which is the Senate bill plus the joint House and Senate reconciliation bill. And this pretty much final package comes out to show a positive score, a bigger saving for the taxpayers than in either the original House bill alone or the Senate bill alone. So we'll talk about that in a little while. But that is hardly all that's happening this week in Washington. It's a very active week. President Obama introduced his No Child Left Behind overhaul. You heard some of the news with reaction to that just a minute ago, and we'll dive into that more deeply tomorrow. Senator Chris Dodd also unveiled his bank overhaul bill, which he hopes will be the definitive word on preventing a repeat of the financial crisis. But will it? We will talk about that now. New York Times reporter Sewell Chan has been covering the Federal Reserve Board this week, a key in the Dodd bill to regulating too-big-to-fail banks, but not key enough for Chairman Ben Bernanke.
The Federal Reserve's participation in the oversight of banks of all sizes significantly improves its ability to carry out its central banking functions, including making monetary policy, lending through the discount window, and fostering financial stability.
Ben Bernanke, who also admitted that too big to fail is enshrined in the Dodd bill, not abolished. Let's talk now to New York Times correspondent Sewell Chan. Hi, Sewell. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. And let me read everybody this Bernanke quote from your article yesterday. He said, "We are quite concerned by proposals to make the Fed a regulator only of the biggest banks. It makes us essentially the too-big-to-fail regulator. We don't want that responsibility. We want to have a connection to Main Street as well as to Wall Street." But, Sewell, what really jumped out at me in that is that he acknowledges the too-big-to-fail is left intact in the Dodd bill. You can confirm
Brian,
that?
Brian, it's interesting you say that. I almost think that there might be a double entendre there. Was he saying the regulator was itself too big to fail?
No.
Like, as in the Federal Reserve?
Yeah, go ahead.
Or was he saying the Federal Reserve will be a regulator of, quote, too big to fail institutions? I think most of us went with the latter interpretation, but I'm wondering whether he also meant the former. But in any event, a key objective of the bill is to end too big to fail. But there's a lot of open questions. Everyone says they wouldn't like a taxpayer bailout ever again. But how do you actually do that? The bankruptcy system, many Democrats especially feel, was inadequate this last time around in 2008. But a lot of people on the right would prefer a more market-based approach, which says that if you fail, you're out, you're done. There shouldn't be any kind of government intervention. They're trying to reach a sweet spot in the middle where they set up this $50 billion fund, which they don't want to call it a bailout fund, but many people are saying it is. And this process that will involve both regulators and bankruptcy judges for a firm that's too big to fail.
So what would happen differently under the Dodd bill in the next Wild West ridiculous risk bubble and crash of a Citibank or a J.P. Morgan Chase or whoever it might be?
Several things, they hope. One is the Council of Systemic Risk Regulators, led by the Treasury Secretary, would try to identify the risk before it gets to a crisis level. There would be a new Office of Financial Research within the Treasury to come up with daily data on what the companies are doing and whether they're getting too big and too risky. And finally, there are some provisions to actually break apart a firm before it gets too large, even before the crisis. But these are all untested mechanisms.
Why is Bernanke unhappy?
Bernanke's unhappy not with the entire bill, I think. I think he's unhappy with the part of the bill that would really alter the Fed's mandate. It would make the Fed much more oriented around the largest and most interconnected financial institutions, even if they're not banks. So for the first time ever, you'd have the Fed looking at a company like AIG, the AIGs of the future, or even the long-term capital managements of the future, and not just banks. he doesn't necessarily mind the addition of that responsibility. What I think he minds is the removal of supervision for 5,000 smaller and medium-sized banks. That's an especially important constituency for the Fed, especially in places where there are Federal Reserve banks like Cleveland, St. Louis, San Francisco, where these Federal Reserve banks have been supervising these smaller banks since 1914.
Listeners, we can take your questions for Sewell Chan from the New York Times, who's been covering the Fed this week, or we can take your reactions to the Dodd bill. Have you had a chance to look at this or watch the media coverage since this got unveiled officially on Monday? Any reactions, any questions? 212-433-WNYC. And what do you think about too big to fail being left intact in this way? 212-433-9692 or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show. Your article says as part of the overhaul of financial regulation, the Dodd bill proposed in November, the previous version, that the Fed be stripped of all bank supervision powers and focus almost exclusively on monetary policy, primarily interest rates. What happened between November and now that Dodd got so much softer on the Fed? I remember the headlines in November about how the Fed would be so weakened under the Dodd bill, and some people liked that and some people didn't. Since then, Dodd withdrew his name from a reelection bid, and a lot of people were expecting him to come out swinging. He could make his last stand and show how tough he's going to be on these banks that messed up and to really prevent something like this from happening in the future and be tough on the Fed. And instead, comes back and gives the Federal Reserve more power over the biggest banks, the very Wall Street institutions that it failed to effectively regulate before the crash. Why does he say he did that?
That's such a perfect question, Brian. And I think two things happened, really. I think the more significant one is that people looked around the landscape, and the Fed was, for better or worse, is seen by many people as the only institution capable of handling the largest financial institutions in terms of supervision. Who else can do it? The Treasury Department is fairly small. It's never been the sort of gigantic overseer penetrating to the different realms of the economy. The Fed has tremendous research capacity. It's also seen, for better or worse, as relatively apolitical. And that reputation for nonpartisanship, you know, Bernanke is a Republican. He was reappointed by Obama, but initially appointed by President Bush. That reputation, sorry for the noise, has served the Fed very well. So ultimately, I think the Fed is sort of the last, but also best option for many of these senators. A second thing that's happened has been a round of lobbying in support of the Fed. Believe it or not, banks actually like the Fed. They see it as the best possible regulator compared to the alternatives. And I think that, and you also look at what's happening in other countries, countries like Britain, Japan, and Germany. The tendency in some of those countries, which at first tried to separate the interest rate policy from bank supervision, has now been going back the other way to have the central bank play a role as a systemic risk regulator.
What about the Volcker rule in the Dodd bill? Now, the Volcker rule, to really kind of boil it down, was supposed to stop the Wall Street banks from making bets themselves on stocks that they were acting as brokers for. So they couldn't go out and tell, you know, mom and pop stock buyer that some stock was a good deal or some securitization of mortgages or whatever it might be, while at the same time they themselves as an institution might be betting against that stock, giving them perverse incentives with how they sell to people. I mean, tell me if you think that's a good little description of the Volcker rule, and how much is it in the bill?
That's right. It's a good description. It's supposed to reduce conflict of interest and reduce risk. The interesting thing about this has been that several journalists assumed that the Volcker rule was dead, and the industry had been saying that for a while, that the Obama administration really wouldn't try to push this. But actually, in the Dodd bill, it's there. It's there in a slightly modified form. What it would do is direct the SEC to do some studying, but it pretty much gives them explicit authority and even pushes them in the direction of an outright ban on proprietary trading and on investment banks owning or operating hedge funds and private equity funds. So I think the administration is taking a stand on this, and it goes to a larger phenomenon, Brian, which is I think that there's a lot of anger right now, a lot of populist anger. It's not necessarily Democratic or Republican. I think it's across both aisles. A lot of anger on Wall Street, and I think in various ways political leaders are trying to channel that anger.
Gay in Brooklyn. You're on WNYC with Sewell Chan covering the Fed for the New York Times. Hi, Gay.
Hi. I don't know if you could see the analogy I was trying to make, but I remember when the old Bell Telephone Company, the original company in New York, was a monopoly, and it's the that's no good, we can't have a monopoly, but it did provide good service. They split it up, and immediately everybody started scrambling for business. And so what happened was the people who were supposed to benefit, you, me, the people down at the bottom, get expensive phone bills, and businesses increasingly, right up to the present day, get all the benefits and special discounts. And of course, nowadays that you have a package with the internet and everything else all in one thing, and you pay relatively little considering the amount of usage you're doing because you're a business. And I get stuck with a high phone bill. I don't actually, but I have special arrangement. But I can get stuck with a high phone bill and I can't do anything about it.
So
I know what's going to happen. We have two monopolies now fighting each other. And, of course, that would be terrible if they weren't controlled, because if our communications went down, my God.
So that's what happened then.
It doesn't seem to me that the feds are looking at quite the right angle.
So you think that the breakup of...
Gay, you think that the breakup... No, I don't think they're on the right track at all.
Gay, thank you for your call. What do you think, Sewell, about that analogy to the breakup of the Bell telephone monopoly?
I think it's a really interesting analogy, but I think the antitrust monopoly comparison can only go so far. Banks actually face, it's almost the opposite of a monopoly. The banks are intensely competing with each other all the time. And in some ways, it's that competition that prompted them to take so much risk that really ended up putting the entire economy at risk. So I'm not sure it carries over quite entirely. One thing I have noticed that's interesting, though, is that a potential winner out of these negotiations is the smaller community banks and the credit unions. And many of them, actually, with all the ire and anger that's been directed at the large banks, see themselves as potential winners. And there's a movement, really, to have people give more of their money. I think Arianna Huffington's been involved in this, to have people keep more of their money in local and small banks.
Senator Dodd introduced his bill on his own, because his effort to woo a Republican co-sponsor, and he was working for a long time to get Bob Corker of Tennessee on board, that effort failed. What do the Republicans object to most in the Dodd bill now that's been out for a few days?
Well, I just spoke actually today with Senator Corker and Warner. That's actually why I'm still on my cell phone, but I'm at an event here in Washington. And I think it's less that there's an objection to one or two things as just the bill's length and complexity. I do believe that they were trying to work on it in good faith up until the last minute, and Dodd decided to sort of just pull the plug because he was concerned about just making off the calendar. I think the key issues that are going to get the most heat next week, though, are still the consumer bill. There's a big effort at compromise, but ultimately there's a philosophical debate over whether this new consumer regulator, which both sides seem to have agreed to, whether it should have independent enforcement power to actually go in, conduct examinations, go into the banks, and say, are you complying with the rules I've written? For the Republicans, that independent enforcement would conflict with other banking regulators whose job it is to make sure that the bank has enough money and that it's safe and sound. The consumer people and many on the left say it's precisely because the banking regulators are focused on the banks that you need a consumer regulator to stand up for the consumers. And I think that philosophical divide might very well be a core issue that if not derails, at least impedes an agreement.
Though I wonder if they would vote no. I mean, this does seem to be the Republican MO to fight the initial popularity of President Obama and the size of the Democratic majority, to vote no on almost everything and just about unanimously. But listen to what Senator Dodd was saying on CBS just yesterday morning about his optimism still for some bipartisanship on this.
I think we can get it through. It's again, Dick Shelby said yesterday, the Republican ranking member of the committee, the former chairman of the committee, and I appreciate his comments, said we're about 80, 85, 90% together on this bill.
Now, that's an interesting comment coming from Dick Shelby. What do you make of that?
Well, estimates I heard today, Corker said today it was 90, 95%, 98% close. I think there is some genuine, I see it happening two ways. First of all, financial reform is not as easily left and right a divide as health care. You see, in fact, very unusual coalitions. When Bernanke was being renominated to confirm, the people who voted against him were some of the most liberal Democrats, like Barbara Boxer, Russell Feingold, Bernie Sanders, who's an independent but votes with the Democrats, and some of the most conservative Republicans. So both of those ends of the spectrum, I think, were channeling this kind of populist anger. So I think both parties know that anger is out there, and there are risks to both parties if nothing happens this year in an election year. So I think there's some effort to try to reach a compromise, because, I mean, if only for the sake of, you know, the economy. And the banks themselves are lobbying for some kind of compromise, some kind of resolution to give themselves certainty. Obviously, they want to shape the details of that compromise. But I could also see it going another direction, with healthcare so dividing right now and so polarizing. I could see an outcome where the Republicans, you know, decide that they are just going to vote no on everything. I mean, that's the biggest Democratic fear when it comes to this issue.
Terry in Garden City, or on WNYC with Sewell Chan covering the Fed for the New York Times. Hi, Terry.
Hello, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. My question is, wouldn't there be a simple way to just to not have this too big to fail in the future? And that would be to ask all these big companies would be required to sign a contract that they would not ask the federal government for any bailout money in the future, that they would have to go into bankruptcy first.
Go ahead, Sewell.
I asked myself this, too, because I'm new to these issues, frankly, and I didn't understand how this came about in the first place. The issue was never that these companies had a gun. I mean, these companies, in a sense, had a gun to the government's head, but it wasn't because the government had a contractual obligation to do anything to help these companies. The whole argument that Paulson made, and Bernanke, and Geithner, and officials from both sides, was that if they let them go into bankruptcy, as they did with Lehman, then there was a broad risk to the entire economy freezing up. Credit markets froze after Lehman declared bankruptcy, and most economists, no matter what their political leaning, now think that letting Lehman go into bankruptcy was a mistake. So that's really the problem, not so much that the problem is an implicit expectation of a government bailout. And if that implicit expectation is not met, as in the case of Lehman, panic ensues, and ultimately the desire is to prevent financial panics, not to reward irresponsible bankers.
Well, so far, we the taxpayers are still on the hook for the next Wall Street crash, as too big to fail is preserved in the Dodd bill. We've been talking about that and some other aspects of it with Sewell Chan, who has moved from the Citi desk over to covering the Fed. So, you know, that's pretty interesting. You go from covering people like Larry Seabrook to people like Jamie Dimon. That ought to be interesting.
It is.
Have fun. We'll keep having you on. Sewell, thanks a lot. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, Governor Patterson's soda tax proposal now seems headed to defeat. We will talk to a supermarket representative and hear a commercial from the beverage industry thanking a state senator who was helping to block it. Is she the senator from PepsiCo? Stay with us.